on Triple J.
This is 2014.
Right now on Triple J, I've got Kim Churchill sitting in front of me. Hey,
hello
Kim.
There.
Nice to meet you. I've never met you before.
I know, yeah. It's a treat. It's nice to meet you as well.
You've sort of travelled through our neck of the woods many, many times. There's a lot to kind of cover with your life. Do you mind going back in time?
Of course not. No, it's interesting.
Let's talk about you and the guitar, because obviously guitar's a passion for you. And
yeah.
And from what I believe, at a very early age, you picked up the guitar and started playing. How young were you?
I think I was 5 or 6 years old. It was right as school was kind of becoming, you know, a big thing. And my mother sort of was quite clever and introduced me to it. And she used to get a lesson on a Wednesday. She'd sort of come home and then give me the same lesson she had.
Hang on. So she got a lesson and then she taught you what she learned?
She gave me the exact same lesson that she just had.
She was smart.
She was.
Saving a bit of money too.
Yeah, exactly. And then I sort of just grasped onto the guitar as a sort of an identity for myself early on, you know, like...
You really took to it as a kid? You took to it straight away?
I did, yeah, yeah. It began to be the thing that I enjoyed doing when I got home from school and on the weekends, you know, and then as I grew up, my dad was kind of clever and he pushed me into classical guitar, and that had this wonderful sort of ladder, you know, you do an exam each year. And
did you enjoy that? Because some kids with music, it can go either way.
It's I hated it.
Yeah, see, you know, it was a bit like me with the violin, you know.
Yeah.
It was like just sat underneath the bed. I had no passion for it.
Yeah, well he gave me the deal, like he'd buy me an electric guitar if I did all right in my classical guitar exams.
Uh-huh.
And things like that. And
was he true to his word?
He was, yeah. Mind you, I got the electric guitar, I played it for about a year and I put it down.
Why?
I don't know. Later on, especially as well, I think I just liked being able to play the guitar anywhere. And I was always playing the electric guitar unplugged somewhere in the house. And so it made more sense to get an acoustic again.
Yeah, so the acoustic was really the instrument that you kind of bonded with mostly.
I think so,
And when you say classical guitar, so you did that for what, about 10 years, learning classical guitar and passing the exams every year?
Yeah. I took 2 years to do one, but it was more because I was too scared to do it the first year. I backed out. And
How hard are they? Are they really hard?
They were, yeah, they were. By the end, it was about 3 hours practice each morning.
Wow.
Before school.
And
just the scales and arpeggios and things were the kind of thing that you only really get there through massive amounts of discipline.
You must have really hated it as a kid.
There was an element of hatred there.
But thankful for it now, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I must have been, I think at about 18, I was only a year or two out of it, and I was already seeing it as this amazing experience. I was very, very grateful that my dad had done that and you know, the gift of hindsight.
Yeah. Were you born in Marimbula?
I was born in Canberra.
You were born in Canberra.
Yeah.
So when did you move to Marimbula? Because everything online says you're from Marimbula.
Yeah. I think my dad got a transfer there for work when I was about 5. I started school in Marimbula.
Okay. So for people that don't know, this is the south coast of New South Wales. It's kind of near Eden, beautiful part of the world.
Yeah.
And I know surfing is a real passion for you as well.
Yeah.
So did you take to that at the same time as basically picking up the guitar?
It was a bit later. I always idolised the surfing world as a really young kid, and it wasn't until I was about 12 that I realised I could be a part of it, you know. And so, yeah, surfing was a little bit later on, but similar to all those small Australian towns, it's kind of intrinsic to the culture, and it's this thing that as a young bloke you're at the beach every day even if you're not surfing, so it was a natural progression.
And you've continued that through. I can tell from the colour of your hair. It's still, you know, it's seen many hours of sunlight and seawater.
Yeah, it's a really grounding. I find as I've grown, it's I've found new qualities in it as a sport and a lifestyle, and it's you know, continued to have a lot of relevance to me.
And carrying the guitar around in the back of the car and surfing along the coast, as I'm sure you do, it's hand in hand. It's a lifestyle, and it's a lifestyle that you seem to have enjoyed for many, many years. What are you? Are you 23 or 24 now?
23.
You're 23.
Yeah.
When did you first start performing live, you know, going in front of people and playing your music?
I was probably about 15 or 16. There was the live performance element of the classical exams, but it was a live performance element of an exam. So it was kind of not quite real. The performing started in small clubs and bowling clubs and RSLs.
Around Marimbula?
Yeah. I remember I used to kind of, you know, go into every restaurant in town and ask if they wanted a musician for a couple of hours, you know, to play in the corner and stuff like that. Because there's not a whole lot of live venues down there, so I sort of made it up a bit.
And what was the response from a lot of those restaurants? Yes?
A lot of them had me. Some of them didn't have me back.
You got your first gig down there.
Yeah.
What was it like? Nerve-wracking? Did you enjoy it? Did you like the art of performing in front of people?
Yeah, I did. Oh, actually, now I haven't thought about it for so long, but it was petrifying. I remember the first kind of couple of months of it, I wasn't yet 18. It was sort of around 16, 17, 18 that I started performing. And I was so scared. I'd sneak out of the car and I'd drink a couple of beers to try to like calm myself down because I was petrified. But yeah. I think it's one of those things that every performer faces sooner or later is that live performance freak out.
Did you ever get that experience where your hand just was sitting on the guitar and you just were so nervous that you couldn't actually move it properly?
Yeah, and they feel like sausages and they don't move like they normally do. Yeah, I'd completely forgotten about that, but it was a real... I had moments where I thought that I was potentially not going to be able to follow my dream of doing that as a career because of how scared I used to get.
What's it like now? Is it like second nature now?
Performing? Yeah, I'd forgotten until just then. Yeah, it's... Now performing is my chance to get as close to completely myself as I think I ever do.
Well, every time you perform, you seem to win more and more people over to the power of your music and what you do. And you've got a new record. We're going to play a few pieces of music from it right now, and we'll come back and talk some more. I want to talk a little bit more about your guitaring technique because it's really interesting. You sort of mix it up the way that you play the acoustic guitar. Kim Churchill is with us on Triple J. His new album is called Silence Win. Let's have a listen to this track, which we've been playing on Triple J. This is Window to the Sky. Listen to the guitar playing. I've got some questions that I'm going to pose to Kim after we hear this track. You're on Triple J.
I was running for the hills, I don't know more about today. Thinking backwards, thinking forward, either way, not much to say. Isolation's quite a way to deal with this mess. Falling at my feet, I knew my time was gone. What do you love? To my window, to the sky. To my window, to the sky. Falling down, I thought I had it all wrapped up inside my head. Others eyes instead. Falling at my feet, I knew my time was gone and I was alone. I'm sick thinking of me, what can I do for you and what you want? What do you love?
So you play that overhand.
Yeah.
Why do you play overhand? And for people who don't play guitar, it's basically instead of putting the hand underneath the neck, you've got it over the top. So why for that song, for instance, do you play it that way?
Well, there's a couple of kind of confessions, if anything. When I first started doing the live performance thing, I was working with this idea of being this kind of virtuosic guitar player. And I was doing a lot of like these experimental kind of two-handed tapping things that guys like Michael Hedges were doing back in the 80s. And then, you know, things like Andy McKee and YouTube really brought this new style of acoustic guitar into focus, where there was a lot of experimental stuff and, in all honesty, quite a lot of trickery, you know, things that aren't actually that complicated that are quite visually impressive. I've since got a different perspective on it, and I still do some stuff like that, but I just grew comfortable playing a lot of chords over the top because that frees up your other hand to play melodies from below. So you sort of play the guitar more like a piano, so to speak. And these days I still approach the chords that way a lot just because it's what I grew used to.
Yeah, okay. But it's not that difficult because I've seen stuff online where you're kind of doing a lot of the tapping and doing the two-handed stuff along the neck. Yeah. That's not difficult?
No, not compared to the classical stuff I was doing, or even like now I've written some three-chord songs that I make more mistakes in. Like, it's a world that's a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Interesting. Kim Churchill is with us on Triple J. We're talking about his music, his background, but also about his new album, which came out on Friday. It's called Silence Win. That track we've been playing a lot on Triple J the last month or so. It's called Window to the Sky. It's got a cool film clip too. I just checked that out a little while ago. The song itself, the meaning behind it, a lot of your lyrics is kind of, there's lots of images and atmosphere behind what you write, but it's hard to sort of nail down what might have inspired a song. What about that track?
That one's quite easy. That was, I was kind of going through a less positive, happy time of my life, and it was brief and odd, and I had to get my head around it very quickly. But during that time, I was living in this kind of odd little like cave thing in the bottom of this apartment in Montreal, and a friend of mine lived nearby, and I would kind of go and visit them and hang out at their apartment, and I realized that I could sort of get out of my own head and stop focusing on my own bad feelings by focusing on doing something nice for them. Mm. And then when they felt good, I felt good. And it kind of opened up this whole moment of realizing that I didn't necessarily have to think about myself feeling bad. I could think about making other people feel good. So that was the window to the sky metaphor.
It's interesting. Okay. So Montreal, I wanted to talk to you about Canada because Canada's played such a big part so far in your musical career. How come? Why?
It's been a very awesome kind of surprise and nothing that I understand. But I got over there. I was really keen to travel when I was first starting to tour. And
what age?
That would have been
18, 19?
Yeah. I think I was 19 the first time I went there. And it clicked for some reason. I think there was a little bit of the surfy roots thing.
Canada doesn't have a surfing scene, surely.
There is a surfing scene, and it's small and kind of very concentrated, you know, like scotch compared to beer or something. They love it when they're into it.
You see, I just automatically assumed it was all the snowboarders.
Yeah, you know,
that's they go hand in hand, the surfing and the snowboarding.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, so the surfing kind of was aligning a little bit.
Yeah. It was, I think, especially in Quebec became my first real, that was the first place that anybody really latched onto it, you know, and I signed with a label there in Montreal after my first little run of gigs in Canada, and things just kind of happened all of a sudden in this interesting way that I don't understand.
So your first deal was actually in Canada as opposed to here?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how many times have you been there? I mean, you were living in Montreal then for a period of time?
I was, yeah, probably 10 to 15 times. It's become a wonderful part of me growing up.
Do you pull big crowds when you do tour around Canada? What size rooms do you mainly play?
No, not enormous. I've sort of you know, really pushed through all the folk festivals and stuff like that. And we do, you know, 300 or 400 people in most places. And that's I mean, I'm really happy to have something like that, a bunch of people to play to like that each night.
Yeah. Your profile here is building, though, steadily at the same time now. So that must feel good because it's kind of been sporadic that you've been here. It's kind of like the name sort of comes and then you disappear for a while. And this record is what, your third or fourth album?
My third, if I successfully deleted the first one from history.
Okay, which you'd like to do.
I've been trying.
Right, okay. And you've worked with Warren Livesey, who's a really well-known producer. Warren, I mean, the name for me is synonymous with Midnight Oil.
Yeah.
Because he worked with them in the 80s. He did Diesel and Dust.
He did.
He worked with them a number of times. But he did Diesel and Dust, which of course is one of those massive Midnight Oil records. And he's produced this record, and it's got a much fuller sound than stuff that you've done in the past. How'd you hook up with him?
He was a kind of an old mate of my manager's, and they kind of reached the point of the second album I did, which I did in Vancouver with a Vancouver producer called Todd Simcoe. And he must have seen something in that album that he really warmed to, because he kind of got back to us and said, if there's any chance we could do stuff in the future. And it was a brilliant point for me, because I'd been very, very closed off to anybody. I feel sorry for Todd having to work with me, because I wouldn't let him do anything.
You just shut down all his ideas.
I shut down everything that anybody had to say that was to do with my music. And that was a little bit immature of me. You know, Warren was just such a powerhouse producer that as if I was going to do anything other.
So there was no butting of heads?
There was no butting of heads. There didn't need to be, because I was ready for somebody to come in and really collaborate.
And take your music further.
Yeah.
To new places.
Yeah.
It's essentially you and Warren too. Looking at the credits, there's a few other players in there doing other instruments, but essentially you two are the bulk of this album, playing side by side.
Yeah, we did. We brought in a string quartet, and we had drums and bass on a couple of tracks. But more or less, we had a tiny little space that we did it in, and we kind of just, he was always in the room. We didn't have two separate rooms or anything. So he was in the room, pushed the button on the computer, and I'd start playing, and he'd be a meter away from me listening. And it was very much a collaboration.
Fantastic. Listen, I'm going to play a song in full in just a moment. I just want to play another real favourite from the record. Is actually a track called You Are Lost. I just want to play part of it right now.
Okay.
This is Kim Churchill on Triple J. I really like that song. As soon as I heard the record, I felt like I'd not heard that song before, but there was something that connected straight away with that song. Does it remind you of anyone? Because I was kind of listening to it going, it kind of sounds familiar, and the way that you're playing the song kind of reminds me of something that I might have heard before.
It's interesting. The chord progression is, I've always seen it as the chord progression that Radiohead stole from Jeff Buckley, that Coldplay stole from Radiohead. I don't know who Jeff Buckley stole it from, but yeah, it does. It's one of the pieces that I've always not felt completely responsible for. I sort of felt like I was just the medium of it becoming in a song.
Yeah, it's really great. And that track as well, I mean, lyrically, was it about yourself?
Yeah. It was one of these songs I started writing songs differently. I'd push record and I'd just play, and I'd let the lyrics be exactly what came out of me on the spot. And then I realised after time that I couldn't get them any better than that. I'd try and edit and change, but literally the first time I ever played the song was the lyrics were done. So I can only speculate on what I was really thinking.
Yeah, okay. And they match the music, and so changing them would have just affected the flow of the music probably as well.
Yeah. It didn't make any sense every time I tried to chop it up. But I think it was kind of that moment of enjoying being lost, you know, that kind of feeling comfortable in that area where you just don't know where you are or what's going on.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's got a special quality to it. And listening to a lot of music as I do, you know, some songs all of a sudden just feel like they're a little bit otherworldly, and that one kind of did anyway when I heard it. But Kim Churchill, nice to meet you. Good luck with all the road ahead for you with this record. It's getting a sort of a major release here in Australia, and you're doing a lot of dates over the next few weeks. After that, you're what, back to Canada to do a tour?
Glastonbury.
Glastonbury.
Yeah.
Have you done Glastonbury before?
I haven't, no. I'm really excited.
Wow, okay. Do you have any idea what day you're playing, what time, who you're playing before and after?
I'm playing on the Friday with Billy Bragg on his left field stage. That was my in, basically.
He's become a bit of a mate of yours?
Yeah.
What, did you cross paths because he played in Canada and he had you as a support act? How did that happen?
We met at a festival and kind of hit it off, and then he asked me to do a few tours supporting him. And he took a bit of an interest, and he's been a huge help to me and an amazing idol, you know, to have. Mm. So to look at the way he does things. But he invited me to come and play on his left field stage, which I think is quite a political stage, so I'm going to need to brush up on a few things.
You're going to have to read some manifestos before you go on stage. Who else is on that stage, do you know?
I haven't had a chance to have a look. It's not included in the main program.
But if Billy Bragg's behind it, it's going to have quality performers on there. And Kim Churchill, the album Silence Win, also has a track called Single Spark, which is in fact the opening track from the record. That's the one we're going to play in full right now. Can you tell us anything about this one?
It was basically coming to the realization that the best thing I could do to really achieve what I wanted with the music was to be quiet and to stop trying so hard. And that became that spark, you know, that thing that happens when you just stop and you make space for it.
Instead of thinking it too much.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's hear it. It's got some good guitar chords in here as well. Kim Churchill, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
The colors that you're leaving soon for an empty